From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello and welcome to another From the Pavilion Lockdown podcast. On today's episode, myself and Callum Guest are joined by Saffron Walden Cricket Club skipper Ben Harris. We'll be discussing all of the latest cricket news, including the new proposals from the CCA on how the 2020 recreational game could look. We'll also be debating why cricket has been delayed a further 2 months and picking three England 11s from their 55-man training group. If you want to contribute to the show, you can do at FTP Cricket 105 on Twitter and Facebook. Let us know your England 11s. So thanks very much for tuning in. My name is Ollie Slack. And before we welcome on Ben Harris to the show, we're going to talk about the local scene first. And the CCA have recently released proposals for how they think the 2020 season could look. This is for the senior divisions, so the leagues just below the Whitings and Partners divisions, which are the top tier in Cambridgeshire. Now, the senior divisions would be split in half. That's League 1, 2 and 3, having two groups in each. Each team in the groups would play each other, and the winners of the two groups would then play off against each other. So would the runners-up, 3rd, 4th and 5th. And that goes for senior division 1, 2 and 3. Callum, you've had a look at the proposals. What are you making them? What was your first reaction?
Yeah, I really like it. We've obviously spoken in the past about potentially leagues being a bit more willing to change up the league scenarios and situations. And obviously, with this whole situation, it's kind of forced secretaries and leagues to get together and actually, you know, make changes to get us out on the park and to get players playing. I like what they've done. Obviously, I feel like there's maybe a couple of sticking points for those that haven't seen it. They haven't actually specified if their people are going to play T20s or 45 over games. Something for the clubs to decide. If I was probably to have it my way, I said that obviously the minor county system is two T20s in a day. And like we've said, with this scenario, with the groups of five, you're only going to get a maximum of five games with the playoff final in there as well. So I just like more games, so maybe two games a day, T20 style, and then at least you get nine games and nine hits.
Yeah,
season matter, and the bowlers get more opportunity as well.
And we have spoke a lot about the flexibility of leagues and potentially adopting new formats in a regular season, you know, if COVID-19 didn't exist. Do you see this potentially maybe being a nice little introduction, or a taster, a trial for these new formats? There's like it said in the document, that there's a, you know, games could be played as T20 or the longer form, which is 45 in the senior leagues. Do you see this as a potential almost trial period for these new plans that, who knows, could be adopted later down the line in years to come?
Oh, definitely. I mean, even if it's not for necessarily the league formats, I definitely feel like almost like a Sunday competition for these lower leagues as well is a thing that should definitely be looked at. Obviously, they do have the cups and stuff that people are interested in, but a T20 style Sunday league or something like that would be definitely something to look at for the CCA. Obviously, the old thing is availability and stuff. You know, your missus letting you go out for two days a weekend obviously is a bit sometimes a sticking point, but no, it's definitely something to look at in the future, I'm sure.
And with regards to travelling as well, because if you speak to a lot of clubs about some of the things they'd like to change, is the travelling in the divisions, even in, you know, the Cambridgeshire leagues, when you're only playing really sides in Cambridgeshire, not even East Anglia, teams still say they would prefer not to travel as far. This sorts out that scenario, because in each of the senior divisions, 1, 2 and 3, the groups are split on locality. So you've got Chatteris, City of Ely, Longstanton, March and Needham within Group A of Senior 1. They're all pretty close together. So again, it solves that issue where potentially sides don't like travelling. Could this be something they adopt in the APL for this season?
Oh, I mean, we spoke about it a few weeks ago with Johnny and Sears, and I said about potentially doing a T20 locally based competition. That was when obviously there was a slight travel restriction in. Obviously, looking forward, I feel like if you've done almost like a few weeks of that, played two T20s against, for example, for Sawston, if you've done Saffron Walden, Burwell, Cambridge, you've then got six games there. The top two maybe go in, and then obviously the Norfolk clubs do similar, the Suffolk clubs do similar, and then you've got a top two and a bottom two from each division, and then you go on and play, hopefully by that time, that's given you what, maybe another a month, hopefully by that time, the infection's even further on. And then maybe travelling's less of an issue. And then you can go into almost like a final stage towards, say, start, middle of September.
And I guess the key of all of this is making it competitive as well, because as much as we want to play cricket, having five or six friendlies is probably going to be quite difficult to get numbers for.
Yeah, I think everyone's, I said it a couple of weeks, it might be hard to get numbers, but then I'm looking at group chats left, right and centre, and everyone's chomping at the bit to get out and play some cricket or something. So, but yeah, that point as well, you want it to have a bit of an edge to it rather than just, you know, muck about with your friends, because especially in the local area, everyone knows everyone, and it'd be difficult just to have a friendly. So no, you probably just, even if it's a made up trophy or just anything, go down to your local B&Q, which is about the only shop open at the moment, and try and get some sort of, you know, wooden trophy and go from there with it. But yeah, I feel like that's probably the way to go as well.
What are your DIY skills like? Could you not make one yourself?
Shocking. I'll be giving that one a miss.
Now it's time to turn our attentions elsewhere and look at the domestic and international game and the prospect of cricket this summer. I'm delighted to welcome on Suffolk skipper Ben Harris. Thanks for coming on, Ben.
Hey, Ollie, you all right?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Firstly, Ben, how are you? How's lockdown been for you over the past couple of months or so?
It's been all right, mate. Been pretty busy with work still. Frustrating with the weather being so nice, not being able to get out on the pitch. But, you know, the main thing's been staying healthy and making sure everyone that you know is staying healthy and that. And, I mean, it's been tough for everyone, but it looks like there's light at the end of the tunnel for now anyway.
Absolutely. And it looks like the horse racing season's getting back up and running, which must be good for yourself.
Yeah, excited today because it's back. So I'll spend the afternoon. I've been in the office since about 5:30 to make sure I can watch the racing this afternoon. So I'm looking forward to that.
With regards to cricket, there's been some news, of course, this week, as there always seems to be sort of drip-fed to us over the last few weeks. On the 28th of May, which was just before the weekend, the ECB announced a further delay to the professional domestic cricket season until August the 1st. The recreational game remains suspended until further notice, with the sole exception of outdoor net facilities. Then on the 30th of May, which was, of course, Saturday, the Secretary of State for Digital, Culture, Media and Sport, Oliver Dowden, announced that the guidance, the latest guidance from the government, and there was a safe framework for sports to resume competitions behind closed doors. It's now up to individual sports to confirm they can meet these protocols and decide when it's right for them to restart. So on the 28th of May, the ECB announced a delay of another month. Of course, the original date was July 1st. And then a couple of days later, the government said it's safe to resume playing sports. So a bit of a contradiction there, but just frustrating that we can't get some cricket, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think the ECB have handled it quite badly. They're rushing to make decisions. I mean, why say 1st of August at the end of May when you've still got 2 months left? Anything can happen in that time. A lot can change. And I don't see why they made that decision, you know, before the government had even made that statement, as you said, on the 31st of May. It's just terribly frustrating. I mean, how can football start? I know they've got all the testing and stuff. On the 17th of June, but cricket has to be 6 weeks behind it, which doesn't seem right to me, considering, you know, in a way, cricket, you know, you're more outside than anyone in the sense that the field's spread out, the batsman's at one end, the bowler's at the other. It's just the ball, basically, is the only problem. And I mean, if no one shines the ball, which people will find hard, and everyone washes their hands at the end of the game or sanitises at the end of each innings or something, or in between drinks or whatever, I don't see why not. We can't just crack on.
You mentioned testing there, Ben, and it's an interesting point because an anonymous chief exec of a county side said that the county game cannot afford the testing to resume the domestic season. They said the ECB can afford to pay for 2 international squads to be tested regularly, but it becomes a major stumbling block when it comes to the 18 counties. Callum, do you think that is perhaps the reason why the ECB look as though they're being slightly more cautious about this than the likes of the Premier League and the football returning?
I mean, yeah, I think that's a major point. I say for the counties, there's always a financial strain on the counties as it is already. You hear at the end of the seasons, most minor, as in most little, the smaller counties struggle in terms of financial side of it. So you can definitely understand that. I feel like if they are going to get it up and running, it needs to be a fair playing field with the 18 counties having the same, you know, luxuries. So I don't think it. I feel like it's hardly surprising that the ECB are playing it safe, because that tends to be the way they go with most things. It's kind of the safe bet. I think they want to see how everything else goes and then make their decision after. They almost want someone else to fall at the first hurdle, and then they can go, oh no, it's not a good idea. Whereas it's, you know, it's that leap of faith going into a bit like the horse racing's doing and the football's soon to do. It's that first leap of faith that you know, I was watching the news last night and they said that the UK's, they're trying to play, they're almost ahead of the science. The science doesn't actually say they we should be going out back and playing sport and stuff, but people want to get up and running again, and it's understandable both ways.
It is an interesting one. I mean, some people could potentially argue that had the ECB's cash reserves not dropped from 71 million to 11 million over the last couple of years due to certain spending on certain things, that they may have been able to afford the testing required for those 18 counties. But of course, that is the situation they currently find themselves in. If the competitions did start, say, on August the 1st, ESPN Cricket Info released reports suggesting how it could look. They said the championship could be split into three regional groups, North, South and West, with all teams set to play a minimum of five games. The top two teams at the end of that regional stage would play a final, probably over about 5 days at Lords. But of course, these results would have no bearings on how teams would start the following season. Firstly, with the championship, is that a way we would like to see? Obviously, again, it's slightly shortened because of the season, Ben, but does that sound a good idea to you?
I just think it's a great shame that I don't see how they're not going to be able to play championship cricket, blast, and what, 50 and 100 has already been cancelled. I mean, they've just got to work a way of, you know, there's certain players out there that just play championship cricket. And if there is no championship cricket, they're not going to hit a ball all year. For example, Nick Brown at Essex or someone like that. So for me, I think that sounds, you know, maybe a sensible idea, but I think they've got to work out a way of playing some championship cricket and probably some T20 cricket.
I'd say they'd probably be putting in that regionalising to lower the lesser the travel.
Yeah,
it's no different to what you do as a junior. To be honest, if you're in a county setup as a junior, that's no different. You're regionalised as a junior. So, I suppose I live in Sussex, so we're landlocked in terms of three major counties either side of us. You've got Hampshire to the west, Kent to the east, and then Surrey to what you'd say towards London, the north. So, for that little pool there, you've got three games of cricket that you can play, T20, 50 over, and longer format, and then you can go a little bit further on. But it really is, I mean, we've all seen about the Cummings thing about the travel. I feel like it really is just lower the mileage and lower the risk of infection. But I feel like it's not going to get up and running until they have the sufficient testing in place, and that all counties are going to be able to do that. That's the major thing.
And of course, as well, I imagine international cricket being played potentially in July will almost in effect be maybe a trial run for how the counties could do it, because we've seen biosecure venues talked about now. I mean, players are being able to train at their grounds, but they're having to be rigorously biosecure.
Yeah, and there's certain grounds that have the luxury of having stuff on site, which is, you know, suitable. I know, obviously, we've seen something like the Aegeus Bowl where they've built a hotel. I've seen the UFC and the boxing's thinking about doing that, and they're going to make people stay in a hotel secluded. That might be a case where, you know, these grounds that have got that on site, they're going to get utilised more than other grounds, which would also make sense, making sure that once that testing's done, the players that are going to play are in a secluded space to everyone else, which is obviously going to be crucial.
The other tournament which could be played in this sort of new schedule reported by ESPN Cricket Info is, of course, the Vitality T20 Blast. That is also set to be played, but the Royal London One Day Cup looks pretty much certain to be abandoned. With the Blast, though, there will hopefully be a finals day at Edgbaston, and we're not sure how many games that they're hoping to play. But I guess the key thing, Ben, is that the T20 Blast gets played. It's a massive moneymaker for the counties, and some will probably say the only real moneymaker for the counties.
Yeah, as you say, it probably is the only real moneymaker for counties. You go to the Champo game and there's probably, what, 2 minute dog or whatever it is. And I think, yeah, as you say, it's key. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do about overseas players. I'm sure they won't be able to come, will they?
I think the clubs have cut the majority of the overseas players. Either they've put them on for next year or they've just said, don't bother.
So that presents a good opportunity for a couple of extra homegrown players, I suppose, who probably wouldn't necessarily got a gig if they had two overseas in the team or whatever it is they're allowed. I think it's important to play Blast, and I think if people can't go, every game's got to be on telly, I think, like the football, because, you know, they should try and do one a day, 6 o'clock or whatever, so cricket fans get their dose and the counties get paid because it's on Sky.
Mm. I suppose it is one of them points you make, as obviously Ben just made, in terms of the overseas not coming over. It's not necessarily giving the youngsters a go. It's actually they're going to be given a go in a really important spots. Obviously, the majority of they've signed all-rounders. So if a young all-rounder's coming in, they're going to probably have to bowl in the power play at the death, and maybe have to bat in the middle order, whereas they might not necessarily, if an overseas was over, they wouldn't necessarily have to do that. So there is an argument that it could only strengthen the, you know, it could really strengthen the English game with all the youngsters that are going to be given these opportunities.
Yeah, it certainly looks that way, and it'd be interesting to see how the season plays out and how long we actually go into maybe September and October with trying to fit all these games in.
From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Let's move on to England then, and it was announced earlier in the week that they've named a 55-man training group, they're calling it, basically a squad, to take part in this summer's cricket, international cricket. However, it looks as though Ashley Giles confirmed that they will only be able to play one format. This is because it's so condensed, they're going to separate the squad into red ball and white ball. So therefore, we've had a go at picking our England Test, ODI and T20 side, but not being able to duplicate any players, so one player can only play one format. Mark Wood was asked on the Sky Sports Cricket podcast last week, and he said he preferred to play in the Test side, if any, to build on those performances in South Africa. Callum, it's a strange situation, isn't it, for players to potentially pick which suit they'd rather play?
Very strange, yeah. I'd say for the majority, they probably wouldn't have the luxury of picking. I feel like the coaching staff may have a thing to say, but the people like Mark Wood, Stokes, Butler, Jofra Archer, you know, these people are playing all three formats at the moment. So, well, I'll go into the teams in a bit, but someone like a Josh Butler probably still wants to, you know, secure that Test spot. So if he potentially picks what his stronger format is in the one-day team, he might be giving someone like a Ben Folkes an opportunity to do well and keep that spot. So I feel like it is a tough one, but like I said, I'm not sure. I feel like the majority of the players probably won't have the luxury of picking. It'll be you're playing in the Test team, we're playing in the one-day team.
Ben, before we come on to the 11s, if you had a choice between the three formats, what would you go for?
T20. Or maybe Test, because it's 5 days. I love cricket, so spending 5 days in the field. But I would not get a run. I'd schnick off every first ball, probably. Or leave a straight one.
Never know.
T20.
Overdone and getting that bar quickly. Well, you probably wouldn't be allowed a bar actually in this time, so it'd be pointless. Yeah.
In your car.
In this time, I'd pick Test, but normally T20.
All right, well, let's move on to the 11s then. And what we'll do is we'll go through each suit first rather than naming each of our 11s. We'll start with the Test team. Callum, what did you find most difficult, firstly, about sort of segregating all these players? What was the most difficult part of all of this for you?
Well, yeah, being the slight badger I am, I still tried to keep a pretty even mix as to what a Test team would look like, trying to get the all-rounder in, etc. But also trying to keep some sort of, you know, on from South Africa, trying to keep the similar team in, which is difficult, bearing in mind, like you said, they're only going to play one format, so there's a couple that potentially going to have a miss-up. So I kind of kept the Test team relatively the same as to what it was, with one or two changes. My T20 team, on the other hand, was almost like a trial, as a trial team. I kind of, my teams have been pushed back that way. So I've had the Test team I've put as number one, and then one day team as two. And then my T20 team really is like a showcase, almost like a showcase event for a lot of the youngsters. But I found I was chopping and changing like no man's business last night.
Go on then, we'll start with you. What's your Test 11?
My Test team. So I've gone Dom Sibley.
Yep.
Rory Burns, and then Zach Crawley at three, Root at four, Stokes five, Pope six, and then I've gone Ben Folkes seven, Dom Bess eight, Jofra nine, Stuart Broad 10, James Anderson 11. What I did find with that one is that I kind of wanted to chuck a couple of, there's a few players that could obviously go in there. I mean, the Overtons, if they were going to play a format, I feel like they were going to play the Test format, and someone like an Ollie Robinson as well, I feel like he's been picked in that 55-man squad. So the argument for that is, with only being a couple of potential Test matches being played, do you say to Stuart Broad and Anderson, do you say sit out and give the youngsters a go? But, you know, I feel like if they're going to get on the park, they're going to get on it to win, so they need to pick their best 11. So,
have you sacked Joe Denley then?
Denley's out, yeah.
Yeah, I've just realised I haven't put Denley in at all, so I have to make some adjustment. I forgot about him.
I picked him and I feel like, I think he's in one of my other teams, but as a bowling option for the one-day team, is more of a it was a time when I had four or five bowlers, so I needed to make sure I had six bowlers, you know, six people that could bowl.
The average is 30. I'm still giving Denley a go.
Go on, name your test side then, Ben.
Crawley, Burns, then Denley, Root, Stokes. So I've got four and five, like, guests each. Then some people went out there, it's Bairstow, Ali, Sam, Curran, Wokes, Broad, Anderson.
Screaming out summer 2017 or 2018 to me with a slight throwback of Bairstow and Ali. Why did you move away from the team that did so successfully in South Africa, Ben?
I've used some of the other players elsewhere, but also Butler. Obviously, you can only use him in one format, and I've used him in ODIs. Moeen's been a very good player for England and deserves another go, and I'd rather use him in Test cricket than anything else. Then you want to give another go to... Depends where we're playing, because Wokes at Lords is bloody good. Sam Curran gives you left arm, and then Broad and Jimmy pick themselves, and you've got a spinner. I think it's quite a good little tack. Don't know, maybe I'm a batter light.
I assumed that we were playing in England. I mean, I did set the instructions for this. I probably should have clarified where we're playing. But given we're in the English summer, despite not being able to play cricket, I went for a more English seam attack. But I kept Sibley and Burns at the top of the order. Crawley 3, Root 4, Stokes 5, Pope 6, and Ben Folkes 7. So very similar to Callum in that respect. Chris Wokes at 8 in course English conditions. Jack Leach at 9. So I think Callum went for Bess and Ben went for Ali. And then Stuart Broad, of course, and James Anderson. A, they can't really play any other format nowadays, and also they probably are the best two for English conditions as well.
You put Wokes in. Wokes at 8.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Wokes is a good. It's just he's kind of leading my one day attack.
Yeah. That was again a tricky decision. Was mainly had to sort of mix up the bowlers, whether it be Wood, Archer, Wokes, and just split them across the ODI or the Test side.
I feel like Pope and Sibley might be absolutely seething that they've missed out in Ben's team.
Yeah. Travel to South Africa, do the hard yards, get the runs, and just get first
to be fair, in England. Sibley probably for Crawley, but not Pope.
Are you giving Pope a bit more time at county cricket to prove himself?
No, I'm going to play him in the 50-over game.
Oh, I see. Okay, all right, sorry. Go on then. Ben, seeing as if you've teased us with a couple already, what's your ODI side?
Roy and Vince.
Breaking up that dynamic partnership at the top of the order.
Yeah, and then instead of Root, who is kind of your anchor in the ODIs, gone for Pope to do that role. And then I've got Captain Morgan. Then probably guess he's put this lad in his T20 team, but Dan Lawrence.
Scored a lot of runs on the Lions tour.
Yeah, I think he's a very, very good player. Then Josh Butler. Then a bit of a wild one, Lewis Gregory. I think he's a good all-rounder. I need a bit of an extra batter.
It's not a wild one.
Handy with the ball. Probably not got 10 overs in him, but I was right. Then Tom Curran, Archer, Rashid and Wood.
With regards to Dan Lawrence, Ben, he's talked about having a bit of a funny technique as well, but do you think that matters? I'm just thinking back to the sort of times when recently, over recent times, especially in English conditions, maybe like Sir Jennings have come in and Wesley, and have had sort of quirky techniques and they've been pulled apart on the Sky Sports screen and then, you know, not too long after they've been dropped from the side. What would you say about Dan Lawrence though? Do you think his technique's solid enough to carry himself into Test cricket or ODI cricket?
It's been so long, I can't remember how he sets up, but I think he's...
he's closed back, he's very much in terms of leg side.
Like, yeah, he loves it off his legs, I think.
But I think he said that he slightly changed his technique before he went to Australia in the winter.
Yeah.
He averaged 98.5, so obviously the change in technique.
I think he's a serious player, and I think that putting him in that side where he's got Morgan and Butler either side of him, he's got the freedom just to nurse his way into it with two really experienced cricketers either side. And I like doing that personally with Walden as well, like people like Nikhil and that. Surrounding with experienced people, I think that's going to really help someone like that. Where if you put him next to someone like Pope or something, two youngsters in a row, I think not only can you get two quick wickets full, but also mentally you can lose them quicker than if you've got someone at the other end to support them.
And if you're a youngster batting out in the middle, and most likely because of having Butler and Morgan either side, they're going to be batting with you at some point. How important would that be for him out in the middle in his development as well, that he's got those two experienced guys who are probably most of the time going to be alongside him?
I'll let Gesty go in a minute, but like I just said, it's massive for, you know, they've seen these situations before countless times. You know, if he's nervous, they'll say, look, just try and get off strike, get down the non-strikes, then see a few balls of me facing, whatever, get into a rhythm, face your first 10 balls, and then settle into it. You know, I think a lot of young people just want to feel bat and ball most of the time, especially if it's their debut or something like that. They can be too eager and obviously flash at a wide one or play a shot they wouldn't necessarily play if they're playing in county.
I feel like, it, like you said, having the experience around them, I've got Lawrence as my kind of next cab off the rank in the test team rather than the shorter formats. I just feel like it gives them a bit more time. So, sometimes feel like if you don't, obviously with one day cricket, I think Butler kind of struggled with that at the start of his T20 stuff. He kind of was coming in situations towards the end where he was getting low scores and it was almost like, is this guy actually up to it? And then I just remember him playing an innings against South Africa where he just blitzed in Pano everywhere. Yeah. And that was kind of then it was almost like a snowball effect for him. But I just feel like in shorter format cricket, it's one of those, a couple of low scores and all of a sudden that confidence goes down. But then some may argue it's maybe easier to score in shorter formats with the fields out. You can get kind of easy runs to the deep fielders to get yourself going. So I suppose there's an argument both ways, but I just feel like they may be looking at him for the next tour down under, having done so well in the winter.
And Callum, I guess the question I'm trying to ask as well is, does technique really matter that much? Do we talk about it too much? Because if you looked at Steve Smith in the nets, it's been said a lot, you probably wouldn't teach a kid to bat that way. So at what point, if a person or a kid is showing a quirky technique and they're saying, yeah, but it works for me, at what point would you possibly step in and change it, or wouldn't you nowadays?
He's got even more rogue, as you'd say, as he's gone through the test match stuff. I remember I watched stuff from him at Trent Bridge when Stuart Broad took them wickets, and his technique wasn't that. It was pretty predominant trigger movement, but he was still looking to hit a lot of balls through the offside. Whereas if you look at him now, early on, he does, if it's up there, he tries to drive it, but he waits for it to be really, really full. And, you know, if it's straight, that's it. But he's kind of tinkered with his technique as he's got to the test match arena. And there's an argument to say that, you know, I just don't feel like the English media allow that to happen. Obviously, you said about Wesley and people like that. They just didn't, you know, they haven't allowed that them kind of techniques to flourish until you get runs. I mean, Rory Burns was another one. Rory Burns was getting slated for his technique, and then he gets a really gritty 100 at, you know, against the Aussies, and all of a sudden, you know, it's just that confidence. We spoke to Mark Wood a couple of weeks ago about, and I feel like the main word I've got out of his whole interview was just confidence. You know, he never felt truly confident until he got them five wickets, even though some of the time he was doing a lot of the donkey work where he was running in, having to come round the wicket and maybe not necessarily, you know, unsettling the batsman. Until you get them wickets or runs behind you, you never really have that confidence, you know, that you can do it.
Yeah, and that was the thing with the Wood interview, wasn't it, is that he said that five for in the West Indies gave him that confidence and didn't really feel like he belonged until that point. Go on, Callum, you read yours then.
Jason Roy, Johnny Bairstow.
Yep.
James Vince at 3. Denley at 4 as an extra bowling option. Owen Morgan 5. Butler 6. And then I've gone Curran 7, Wokes 8, Rashid 9, Jordan 10 and Mark Wood 11.
Jordan.
Interesting.
Yeah. Jordan's a gun T20 bowler.
No, I've replaced him in the T20 side nicely. Now, the argument for Jordan was I could have gone an extra spinner, but that's where Joe Denley comes into play. He might have to bowl a few overs here and there.
Yeah. See, I've got Dan Lawrence off the wrong foot. You seen him bowl?
Yeah.
Interesting with your 11, Cal. There isn't, of course, you could argue Denley, but there's no that real natural all-rounder. I guess that potentially Stokes or maybe even a Gregory may provide, or
I'm kind of relying on Sam Curran, Chris Wokes to kind of between the two of them fill the void of Stokes, which is a hard task.
But if you remember in the World Cup when Moeen Ali got dropped midway through the tournament, Chris Wokes came in and they went for the extra seamer England with Archer, Wood, Plunkett and Wokes, and Wokes batted a bit higher up the order and proved his worth, and again obviously got Test 100 at Lords as well, so more than capable batsman.
Genuine, wasn't he a genuine number 3 in one of the World Cup?
Yeah, at the age as well, yeah, against West Indies.
Maybe I'm doing a disservice batting him at 8. Maybe I should
put him up
the order.
He can bat. What do you guys think of Lewis Gregory?
I've got him in my T22.
Well, I rate him very highly, but then you might say I'm slightly biased.
There's no bias of you.
Never. I'll read out my ODI side then. I didn't want to break up Roy and Bairstow at the top, so they stay in James Vince at 3, I've gone for someone none of you mentioned at four, which is Sam Hain. Scored heaps of runs for Warwickshire over the years, especially in Whitepool cricket.
He was in at five for me at one stage, but I had to take him out. He just doesn't bowl. That's why I definitely got the nod, because I just had literally genuine batters.
So again, poor Denley, I've forgotten about him, so you could put him in there. Owen Morgan at five, a skipper. I've gone with Lewis Gregory at six, and I just feel like I'm a batsman short though, but I do think that he can pull up trumps. He was averaging 46 in the blast in 2018 at a strike rate of 202.
He's getting more and more experience now. He's doing all this Pakistan Super League, Bangladesh Premier League, whatever.
He's also captains the Somerset T20 side as well, so it's good to have those sort of young leaders in the side. I went with Liam Dawson at seven, a handy bat, but also trying to sort of replace that Moeen Ali role, who's in my T20 side. Tom Curran, Adil Rashid, Jofra Archer and Mark Wood. So three seamers, and of course Gregory as well, and then Dawson and Rashid. So I might think I'm maybe one batsman short, but hopefully I should be okay, because again, England went slightly seam heavy in the World Cup, so I'm hoping that will reap dividends this time around.
From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio.
You move on to T20 then, and your experimental sides. Go on, Ben.
T20 side, I've gone Banton.
Easy choice, that one.
And Liam Livingstone up top. Livingstone did bloody well for the Perth Scorchers up top.
Yep.
And I think he's a seriously exciting player. And those two up top, absolutely could be absolute fireworks, or you could be naught for two. but I think that's what the way we should play T20 cricket. That's the way I like playing cricket, going at it. And I think it's exciting, but also can win you matches very quickly. Three is Milan, who probably has one of the best T20 records, I think. And then 4, 5, 6 is a bit odd. Laurie Evans. 5 is Billings.
I mean, his shoulder injury, I think he had a shoulder injury. You know, before that, he was being kept out of the side or the roles because of Butler and players like that. But he's a serious player. And, you know, he's played with the Chennai Super Kings. I think he's won an IPL, maybe two. So he's a proper player. They don't pick him for no reason.
And 6 is Phil Salt. I know he doesn't normally bat there, but he normally bats up top, but I wanted to get him in. I think he's a good player, he's an exciting player. Had his first T20 gig this year with the Strikers. Well, Big Bash gig, looked good. Then I've got Dawson left arm. Dawson, obviously, poor lad in the ODI World Cup winning squad, but didn't get a game. Very good all-round cricketer, just misses out.
Poor lad, I'd take that. Sitting on the bench a few.
He'd want some game time, I suspect. but no, he's a serious player as well. Again, gets T20 gigs around the world, offers a left arm spinning option, can bat as well, as pretty handy batter. And then I've gone Jordan, proven as one of the best death bowlers. And I've got Parkinson, who I'm unsure about, it was him or Crane, but I think leggies are very important in T20 cricket. They can either go the distance or can end up with 4 for 18 or something like that. And he's then Pat Brown's an exciting young player, so...
He's very much that kind of bowler as well. He bowls it very slow, doesn't he? I was a bit worried for him in New Zealand, but he...
Yeah, so he's been absolutely pumped.
Because of the small boundaries, we ended up taking, I think it was 4 for 40, but you know, it sounds 10 and over sounds a lot, but if you pick up 4, if you can guarantee your captain 3 or 4 wickets pretty much most times you bowl, you know, that wins you match for more T20 games than actually just going at 7 and over.
I think that's it, isn't it? I'm missing one, to be honest. Oh, I'll go Richard Gleeson. Good bowler.
Richard Gleeson.
Plays for the Renegades, doesn't he? Did quite well.
Well, I know he's Lancashire over this side of the world, but...
Played for the Renegades, yeah.
Go on, Cal.
Who have I? I've got... same top three as Ben, and I've got Banton, Livingstone and Milan. Pretty much exactly the same reasons. Banton and Livingstone were... Obviously, I was over in Oz, and they were just electric pretty much every time they went out and batted. And I think they'd done almost like a 6 for 6 battle when they played against each other in Perth one game. It was pretty amazing to watch. They just kind of went at it. Milan at 3, like Ben says, his record in T20 cricket, very, very good, solid player. I've then got Moeen Ali at 4. Probably people say it's high, but I need to put him in a team. T20 team would be fantastic. Obviously gives you that bowling option, but actually when he plays for Worcestershire, he bats high up and always seems to do really well for them. Just feel like this would give an opportunity to act with the team I've got to bat higher up. Sam Hain at 5, Billings at 6 with the gloves, and then I've got Gregory 7, Dawson 8, Saqib Mahmood, Thunderbolts from Lancashire, bowls at the death as well. He's almost like, I've replaced him with Chris Jordan for the T20 team, just as a, you know what you're going to get with Jordan, so I put him in a stronger one day team, whereas this, and then I've got Matt Parkinson at 10, and then Pat Brown also death bowler at 11.
Nice, yeah. I mean, Pat Brown has taken to T20 cricket with a blast, anyway, like a duck to water. He's been really impressive. Watched him again last night on Worcestershire against Birmingham, highlights from last year. And they're actually saying, I think, on commentary, that the coach at Worcestershire says he hasn't actually got that many variations, just got his stock ball and his knuckle ball, but just chooses, obviously, the timing of when he uses them, and obviously the batsman actually being able to play it as well is another thing altogether.
I suppose a couple of, obviously, Ben put in Richard Gleeson. He actually didn't have, he went to the Big Bash and he was almost like the Renegades' his big overseas player that they thought, and I kind of bigged him up, obviously being in Melbourne, I bigged him up to say, hey, he bowls really quick, and he kind of got smashed every game, so I'm not kind of sure what damage that's done to him. But obviously, like you said, the experience that you get from going to play in these big competitions can, you'd think, can only help these people. And then the other one maybe to miss out, Phil Salt, and then Ben Duckett as well, maybe he could maybe fit him in the top order.
What about David Willey, left arm option? Really gone.
I just feel like David Willey maybe
wings it, bro.
Similar to Plunkett, they've kind of made their mind up a little bit with him.
It's interesting. Both of you have like moved away, and it was quite refreshing in a way that you've both gone with a younger side, and especially with the bowlers. Obviously, Pat Brown, Saqib Mahmood.
They definitely need that strength and depth as to who's the next, you know, the next people to take on them vitally important power play and death overs.
Whoever you just said, not on that list. Who was it?
Plunkett.
Yeah, where's Plunkett?
Yeah,
he didn't get picked.
They didn't pick him at all. They didn't pick him.
Why? That's mad.
After the World Cup, they binned him off.
That's a joke. It's a heavy length in the ODIs. I knew I was missing someone.
Well, that's the thing. I suppose you need that. You do need that hit the deck bowler for them. You know, the longer square boundaries. You massively need
square boundaries. That's vicious. He turned a few games in the World Cup.
He got three wickets in the final, didn't he?
Yeah, don't agree with that.
Anyway, my T20 11, I've tried to try and balance it slightly stronger across all three formats. And I open with Tom Banton and Joss Butler, who will be the skipper for the side. Dawid Malan at three, pretty much we're all agreed on that. I've gone Laurie Evans at four, and it was very tight between him and Liam Livingston. But I just look back at his stats. Laurie Evans in white ball in England, and he's averaged 44 in the blast last year, One Day Cup 41, and then again going back in the blast, he averaged 68 the year before, 60 in the One Day Cup. So, I mean, his stats, and you have got that general feeling that he has been performing for some time. I think he's 32 though, so he's getting on.
Any difficulty I'd say with picking Laurie Evans is that it's the role, he kind of plays like an anchor role for Sussex. He kind of bats through pretty solidly. He's going to guarantee you that. But also playing at Sussex as well, it's a smaller ground.
Hmm.
So sometimes it's a bit like playing at Taunton when it used to be flat as a pancake. It's sometimes stats deceive the public perception as to can he do it on an international stage.
We'll see, yeah.
Just an argument.
I'm sorry, I've given him the chance at 32.
Poor bloke, yes, Steve. You head down to Sussex, mate, and go and average 60.
He's toiled away for years in the English cricket, 32 years of age, and
he got sent out on loan by Warwickshire to go to Northampton, and then Sussex picked him up. But and got released by Surrey. But, like, it's just an argument. Sorry.
It's all right. Similar to Callum, I've got Moeen Ali at five, Sam Billings six. I was tempted not to put him in because he has been given a fair few chances, but Ben's argument was a good one. He's always been behind the likes of Bairstow and Butler, so probably he's given a few chances, but never really had a consistent run of games. And I think he did okay in West Indies when he was given that run of games. David Willey, you mentioned him, Ben. I've got him at seven as trying to sort of fill a Ben Stokes issue around. I know Ben Stokes obviously bat higher, but I think Willey's underperformed a bit with the bat for England than what he's shown with the likes of Northampton and Yorkshire. But hopefully he can score some big runs with a bit of a revival. Chris Jordan at eight. You know, I think you need him in the T20 side for those Yorkers and bowling at the death. Saqib Mahmood. Yeah, gunfielder as well. Saqib Mahmood bowling with him at the death as well would be great to see. Matt Parkinson and Pat Brown as well. So again, you've got three death bowlers there, which I think, you know, if you can try and really squeeze the last six or five overs when teams are really putting their foot down on the pedal, hopefully you can with those three bowlers.
Good side.
Yeah.
Strong side.
Just not sure about leaving Livingston out.
And Butler's opening. Did you say Butler's opening?
Yeah. Butler's opening.
So that's right. He does that for the old Rajasthan Royals.
Yeah.
Good, isn't it?
I know he leaves probably a bit short middle order, but Moeen's there, and if he feels like turning up,
I can't believe you've got Moeen in the T20 lads. It's absolutely that's tragic. He gets pump bowling.
How many chances he had in the Test side?
He just lobs up these little. Yeah, but before he got sacked off or whatever happened to him, he was bloody good. And then batting, he's too inconsistent. He's so inconsistent.
Yeah. Talking about playing at Sussex, did you not see his 100 in the quarterfinal last year for about 40 balls?
No, I missed that. Right, and to be fair, and he batted for England once, didn't he? Absolutely hooned it against someone.
They chased, yeah, it was Sussex. They chased down 200 and they chased down about 15 overs.
He is, but he's Mr. Inconsistent. How about all the other games that he schnicked off a gnaw, hit it straight up in the air, hey?
Yeah, in the Test side as well.
I had to go back to that argument, Laurie Evans. I'm just thinking, Laurie Evans' argument, Moeen Ali hasn't got an average at home.
You're picking a bowler then.
Got a T20.
Oh,
it's amazing. Now, I found for doing it that, you know, bowling wise, England have got so much strength. And, you know, I've left out obviously Plunkett as well. So has the England, the selectors have left out Plunkett as well. But yeah, I think bowling wise, England got so much to offer. The one sort of part of the team where I was scratching my head around was that all rounder. And apart from Stokes and Gregory, I don't think there's many really all rounders. Maybe, of course, Moeen Ali as well.
The other thing as well with it is that there is an argument that you don't want to kind of show your hands too early to the oppositions with a T20 World Cup incoming, potentially. You don't want to kind of show, you know, these youngsters off. I'll just go back to like Jade Dernbach's scenario where the back of the hand slow ball when he first went into the international scene was just unbelievable. No one picked it, and then people started getting used to it, and then by the time a major tournament came around, people got used to it. So it's, you know, Pat Brown or people like that, there is an argument to say you kind of rest them and rotate them a little bit, just not show. And there's a story about Shane Warne. I think he played England on a tour game one time and he just didn't show him a Google or didn't show him any variation. So they just thought he was just a, you know, a young leggy that bowled the odd drag down. And then they played him and then all of a sudden he had all these variations that they hadn't seen at all in the tour game. It's kind of that mental aspect as well.
Well, let's just recap then on our England 11s and run through the players that we didn't choose. James Bracey of Gloucestershire, Henry Brooks of Warwickshire, a fast bowler there. Bryden Cass for Durham, Mason Crane, you mentioned him, Ben, but didn't pick him. Ben Duckett for Nottinghamshire, Tom Helm, bowler for Middlesex, Will Jacks, a young batsman at Surrey, Keaton Jennings, of course, played for England before, Tom Cullen-Cadmore for Yorkshire, an exciting opening batsman, formerly of Worcestershire. Craig Overton and Jamie Overton. Again, I'm with Callum there with my almost backup bowlers in the Test side, especially Jamie. I'd love to see Jamie bowl and get taken on that tour down under in the Ashes in a couple of years. He'd really get the most out of those bouncy and fast tracks. Ollie Robinson, you mentioned him as well, Cal, from Sussex. Ollie Stone, none of us put Ollie Stone in, despite obviously making his Test debut last summer and, of course, battled with injuries, but had a taste of Test cricket. But yeah, he'd probably be one of the backup bowlers that Test side as well. Rhys Topley, now down at Sussex. Amar Verdi, Surrey spin bowler. And in fact, I've just realised I haven't put Sam Curran in my team. I have an absolute stinker there, and I've left out Sam Curran on his birthday as well. That's terrible. All right, well, poor old David Willey. He gets a revival, and now I'm chucking him out. I'll move TC, Tom Curran, over to the T20 side. Chris Wokes can go in the ODI side. And Sam Curran give you that left arm seam option. Nice little 80 mile an hour gentle pace for them anyway in the Test arena. So so just to complete that list of players who didn't make it, David Willey now not making it as opposed to Sam Curran, who I forgot about. Poor Sam.
From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Right, Ben. Have you managed to conjure up your fantasy slip cord, which you admitted at the start of the show you haven't done, but you've thought about it over the past 40 minutes or so?
I've got a gun keeper.
Just to clarify the rules, you need a keeper, first slip, second slip, first slip and a gully. One of them must be a cricketer, only one of them as well, local or pro. So start with wicketkeeper.
Yeah, wicketkeeper's James Corden.
Okay. Why?
He's one of the funniest humans in the world, I think.
Is he?
There's just something about having an overweight wicketkeeper that's quite funny, really, that they can't move, and watching it go through his legs, it'd be quite funny, I think.
I think you're the second person who's done this. I think Might have been Johnny Atkinson had James Corden as well. Or Alex's might have had Ricky Gervais as well. But the point being, very similar classic village cricketer, short sleeve, black shoes, sort of gloves.
He'd definitely have short sleeves. Cover himself in sun cream.
And he'd be good in the car as well, we clarified earlier on.
Yeah, on the trip.
Yeah.
He'd be very funny.
Go on, first slip.
First slip would be Michael McIntyre.
Another funny man.
He is a very funny man. Guess you watch Michael McIntyre's big show?
Yeah, yeah.
He's a top man, isn't he?
Literally, it's going to be comedy channel in your slips.
Yeah.
He's a top. We're not catching anything in this shit.
Is this theme continuing the whole way through?
No. At second slip, I said it is boring, but Rahul Dravid, best slip catcher there's ever been. He's caught more catches than anyone. And my plan is that he's going to dive across one and keeper and grab him.
Imagine Rahul Dravid and Michael McIntyre right next to each other in the slips.
they wouldn't understand it, would he? I haven't had much time to think about this.
Just to clarify, on the cricketer, why did you opt for a professional rather than a local Saffron Walden cricketer?
Rather than because I'm one of the slippers and I can't catch, and I'm not funny, and Jake Foley's the other, and he definitely can't catch. Okay. So we're in a bad way there.
Nice to see the standard of cricket in East Anglia as strong as ever.
Yeah, there was a game last year. I keep reminding him, Foley dropped out, I was bowling. Johnny Atkinson comes out to bat. We all know what Johnny's like. Takes middle, I'm bowling, snick him off first ball, straight to Foley, drops it. Goes and gets 65 not out.
Funny Johnny didn't mention that. Johnny didn't mention that the other day.
Did he not?
No, funny that.
Yeah, that was annoying. anyway, third slip.
You can put yourself in as well, by the way.
No, can't catch.
I think you might just want to be there.
I don't want to be there. I'll be a third man. Third slip is it's a bit of a rogue one, but a guy called Robson Green. Don't know if you ever watched his Extreme Fishing programme. He's an absolute nutter.
No.
It's on Channel 4.
It's quite a change. That's quite a change from James Corden and Michael McIntyre to somebody presenting Extreme Fishing.
No, but he's very funny. And I went to a work do in London and I sat next to his brother. And I mean, he was the spitting image of David Moyes, but he was very funny. And then Gully.
And he'd be able to catch as well, wouldn't he? He's good at catching fish. So.
Yeah. And Gully. Can I have a local cricketer?
Yeah, we've already had one. So.
No, right, I can't.
No, not really. Sorry. But to be fair, Alex Sears broke the rules. So if you want to, you can. It doesn't really matter.
No, I don't like breaking rules. Gully, I will go Andrew Flintoff. That counts. He's now a TV programme.
Okay. Yeah, I'll let you have that one. Okay.
Or Paddy McGinnis.
My main issue, your slip, Courtney, if that Robson Green's an absolute nutter, I'm worried he's going to then try and take over Rahul Dravid's catch.
No, he's an absolute nutter. You should watch it. When he hooks a fish, it cracks me up.
Okay. You haven't really sold it, but we'll give it a go. Freddie Flintoff at Gully.
Yeah.
And this is the TV presenter /
Or Paddy McGinnis, because he'd just lay into the batsman.
Okay, yeah. I can imagine he would be funny, actually.
Yeah, he's a good man. Like.
So just read out your fantasy slip Corden in full.
James Corden, Michael McIntyre, Rahul Dravid. You've asked for something different.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good.
Robson Green, no one's heard of it, so.
Yeah, we will have after this, though.
Yeah, and then, I can't remember. I'll go Paddy McGinnis.
Okay, Paddy McGinnis.
Like Paddy.
I like it. Ben, as ever, thank you very much for coming on, mate. Glad you're well. And I'm sure we'll speak again soon. Enjoy the racing as well, getting back.
Cheers, mate. Thanks. Cheers, Kesty. Take care, mate.
Take care.
Callum, thank you, mate. Thanks for coming on.
Good stuff. Thank you.
From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio.
So that's all we have time for this week on the From the Pavilion Lockdown podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it once again. We'll be back with another podcast next week and we'll tackle another 11, I'm sure, and we'll get someone else's fantasy slip Corden from the local cricket scene. We'll also update all the local, domestic and national cricketing news as well. In the meantime, head over to our social media page at FTP Cricket 105 on both Twitter and Facebook. Send us in your 11s and give us your views on the local talk we did at the start of the show and all the international news we've rounded up since then. So all I have to say is thanks again once for your company, and until you hear from us again next time, stay safe and well. Bye bye. Cambridge 105 Radio.